Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
So much to cover on the show with you until 9 o'clock. This is hour number two of Green and Growing. Glad you're here on a beautiful Saturday morning. It's going to be a great weekend. And of course, a chance of rain is in the forecast for Tuesday. I feel like every weekend I sit in this seat, I give you good news through the weekend, and it's always Tuesday that the rain happens, and that's Taco Tuesday. That's an important day for me. Nothing can stop Taco Tuesday. I do it every week. 404-872-0750. Talking about a variety of things. Open the show, letting you know, for those of you in South Fulton County, the Sonoy Farmers Market opens today at 8:30 from April through December. A lot to see there on Travis Street. If you're looking for something to do with the family this morning, head out, plan breakfast there, mimosas too. Sounds like a good time. Any of the local farmers markets that you're interested in your community, you can find them by either following your city or Chamber of Commerce on social media. That's a good way to stay in tune with this stuff. Or just Google the Georgia Department of Agriculture, find their website, and then look up farmers markets, and you can see all of the community farmers markets. There are a ton this time of year and throughout the summer for fresh vegetables and foods and all kinds of fun things. All right, off to the phones we go again. Jesse in Rockdale County. Hey, Jesse, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Yeah.
Eastern hemlock. I've been Googling it, looking it online. I believe we have three in our yard, which we got about 40 years ago. We dug them up outside of Helen, Georgia. And I have been trying to root one, propagate it, whatever, I bet for 8 or 10 years. The limbs, you know, the bottom ones hang down on the ground. Mm-hmm. So I've scraped it, put root powder growth on it, put some topsoil on it, and put a rock over it to hold it down the dirt. Years later, the branch keeps growing, but there's no root. I've tried clippings, you know, with root stimulant powder and all, and I've tried getting the cones and going through the seeds. And
wow.
You have to go through a lot of cones.
Yeah, no kidding. That's dedication.
Well, I've got about 20 seeds. They are tiny as everything. But anyway, I'm waiting to plant them. I've got the pot ready to get them started in. But got any great suggestions? Because I need some help on this one.
I don't, Jesse. As far as propagation of conifers and stuff, I mean, conifers is probably one of the topics I know the least about. And one of my regrets, you know, I was introduced to Tom Cox almost 2 years ago, I guess, who has the Cox Arboretum in Canton, and put his blood, sweat, and tears into that thing for 30 years. And he passed away this time last year, as a matter of fact. And I went out to his property a number of times before he passed. And I had such a good time listening to him talk about all the conifers. He's written a book, as a matter of fact, about conifers in Georgia. And there's so much to learn. And I just didn't have enough time with him to learn all I wanted to about conifers. I do remember a video that I took with him. I may try to track that down and share it on the Facebook page, because once you got him talking about conifers and ginkgos, he couldn't stop him, but it was so interesting. And the woolly adelgid I just remember him talking, because he had a couple of hemlocks in the 13-acre property in Canton, and the woolly adelgid is one of those bugs that will just wipe out the eastern hemlocks if we're not careful. So that I remember him saying was a threat. But my gosh, propagation, that's tough. It sounds like you're doing everything right. That's how you would, you know, propagate other things, you know, hardwood cuttings and stuff. So, and the seeds, though, that's going to be tough for sure.
Well, I'm going to plant them about a half inch to an inch deep again and try that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just keep trying.
And you said, I heard earlier, that someone's coming up in a week or two to talk about Eastern hemlock.
Oh, no. The Georgia Arborist Association is having a guest speaker on Tuesday around lunchtime. Yeah. And, okay. and she's going to be talking about just the blight of the eastern hemlock and all that kind of thing, kind of a grassroots movement, you know, to bring awareness to them, I guess, that woolly adelgid and all these other things. So that's going to be pretty neat. I think it's in person. Let me look. Lunch and Learn with Save Georgia's Hemlocks. Yeah, I think it's in person. That'd be cool if it was online, though, because that's really a neat thing. And that's such a niche thing. But, man, once you're interested in hemlocks or something like that and you start learning about other conifers, so cool.
They're beautiful trees in the yard. They look great. But one other quick question.
Sure.
We have probably 1,000 daffodils on the property. All down one fence line, our neighbor loves English ivy. Loves it.
We don't love your neighbor too much.
I go to his property and cut it with my axe and machete off the trees that it's growing up because they're going to fall on our yard.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, we have tons of daffodils. I know when they die out completely and I can't see any more leaf at all, can I spray that with a weed killer to get that ivy out of there? Or
Like to your point, exactly. All the foliage needs to be completely gone, dead. No chance of any green whatsoever from those daffodils. So obviously the heat of summer is going to be like a guaranteed time because, any of those sprays are going to work on the foliage of the English ivy. So, yeah, that would be a safe time to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You heard me talking maybe to that caller earlier about the bioadvanced brush killer. I mean, one application, it's certainly not one and done, but removing what you can manually first and then spraying what's left. That's a start. Mm-hmm. That stuff. I mean, man, I'm just highly allergic to poison ivy and I have that stuff out every year and it works really good.
I've got about 300 feet of fence line that is just is coming into the yard.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. You're not going to stop it. I mean,
awful. No, I can't pull all that up, but I'm going to spray again in the heat of summer. But you have a wonderful weekend, and thanks for helping me and taking my question.
Well, I feel bad. I was 50-50 on that one. I couldn't help you with the hemlock one.
Well, please, in all your spare time, will you please study?
You got it. Yes.
Okay,
and I'm actually back on the radio tomorrow, so no spare time in the coming days. But yes. And I have I have the book right beside my bed too, you know, the one I just told you Tom Cox wrote about conifers. I have it right beside my bed and I have read through it once, but I don't think I retained a whole lot. So I will just for you, Jesse, because I like you. I'm gonna read it again.
You will be tested.
All right.
Thank you again.
Always good to hear from you. Have a good weekend. Yeah, ginkgos and conifers for Georgia. I mean, a funny combination of trees, but just such passion and such knowledge about both those things. My friend Tom Cox, who passed away last year, but his family's keeping the arboretum going. So if you're ever in the Canton area, let me know and I'll connect you with that. 404-872-0750. Up next is Harry calling from South Carolina. Hey there, Harry. Welcome. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you too, Ashley.
How are you?
I've got an issue I've been trying to address to local nurseries and some of these big box stores.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about my gardenia plants. I've got four of them in the front of the house, and we moved. They're about a year and a half old. Two of them are. The other two were replaced by the nursery at the one-year mark because they had died. Irregardless of what I did to them, fertilized them, kept them watered and everything, but they died. So they replaced them. They came out, and the soil is clay. So I'm thinking, well, it's the soil. They're sitting in a clay pot, and the water can't go anywhere. So after they replaced those two, I removed 40 gallons of clay from the front area. It's not that big. I removed the clay, and I introduced topsoil, peat moss, and a sand. It's soil three composition from a turf supply house. I won't mention their name. But I introduced that and mixed it into the ground real good and then mulched it back over and watered them in. But now the new plants, their leaves are back turning yellow and falling off again.
You know what? I don't mean to kick you when you're down, Harry, but they are acid-loving plants. So gardenias do well in clay soils.
Well, see, the knockout rose is just blowing everything away. I put a knockout rose plant in the corner, and it's going to town.
Oh, okay.
And I know gardenias love acidic soil.
Yeah.
But is clay is an acidic soil.
Mm-hmm. Yep, super acidic. That's why here in the South, azaleas do so well, rhododendrons and all of that, because they're acid-loving plants. Now that you've changed the soil a little bit, I would go back to a fertilizer that is for acid-loving plants, like Hollytone.
Yeah.
Spoma makes Hollytone, or, Miracle Grow's got one, too.
I bought the Hollytone last year because they needed to be fertilized in the spring, and that was the first spring. So I bought the Hollytone and I applied it.
And one thing, too, the yellowing leaves, the yellowing leaves could be too much water. It also could be too much sun. I know you told Kayvon when you were calling in, you have the radican gardenias.
Yeah.
And
yes, I do.
They do like, a little bit of shade to full sun, but if they're not protected from hot afternoon sun, they can burn a little bit. So I would think either they're drying out in the clay pots, or they might be getting a little too much sun, and that's stressing the leaves.
Yeah, they're on the it's a southern exposure. The front of the house is southern, and they're right by the front porch.
Yeah,
and they get full sun.
They're potted, right?
No, they're not potted. They're in the ground.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said something about a clay pot. Okay. Yeah, I mean, and they're not getting any shade at all from like bigger trees anything.
No, the only shade they get is when the sun goes down.
Yeah, that's because
I don't think the sun. Yeah, they will get sun in the summer months because the sun's going to be, the front of the house should give them some shade, but I haven't been measuring how much shade. I've been measuring how much shade's on the side of the house, and we get about 5 hours of direct sunlight on each side of the house.
Yeah.
I can relocate those four plants to the side of the house, which is clay.
Yeah, maybe do.
My wife wants me to get some yellow mops.
Is that little...
a little dwarf yellow mop. It looks like a mop head. You stick the mop upside down.
Yeah, like cousin it or something, and they grow close to the ground. Yeah, those are beautiful.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I mean the yellow in the landscape is stunning. So that might be a good idea. Swap out some stuff, move it around, because if you move the gardenias to the side of the house, they're going to get what they need. They're going to get that clay soil again, which they like the acidity. They're going to get a little more shade. And make sure you plant them up a little bit. They got to be in well-draining soil, so elevate them just ever so slightly. Don't dig the hole too deep, and that way you make sure the roots drain well. And I think you're going to give them a good chance that way. We've solved a couple of the problems, I believe.
Yeah, I had no idea. I figured that the water wasn't draining because of clay.
Yeah.
And the side of the yard has a low spot, and it holds water, and the sod's dying, and I've been trying to build it up slowly, and I'm not fast enough, I suppose.
water runs faster than we do.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, Harry, you're on the right track. And you're right. I mean, clay does retain water a lot, but just breaking up those planting holes, really, really good. Backfill with that soil, though. Don't introduce any new soil into the hole when you put them back in the ground. And check back in, because I would love to know that what I'm telling you is correct, and I want those gardenias to thrive. And I've got a diamond spire, which can take a little more sun, is a little more dwarf. But good luck. Gardenias are one of my favorites. Love them. And the knockout roses, good job. They're so low-key, man. They're easy. 404-872-0750. When we come back, the top three things to do in the landscape this weekend, and Jut Howard from NG Turf next on WSB.
Did you know you could listen to Green and Growing, Atlantis Morning News, and all your favorite shows on your smart speaker? Tell it to play 95.5 WSB, and we're on.
95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk. Here's Ashley.
All right, the weather update for the weekend brought to you by Finley Roofing. Real simple, folks. It's going to be nice. Partly cloudy today, a high in the mid-60s, though. Right now, it's pretty chilly. It's close to around 40 degrees, so grab a jacket as you head out of the house. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow with highs back in the 70s. We're going to be hovering around the low 70s and then maybe the upper 70s come Monday. So some nice weather in store for the next 3 or 4 days.
Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca. Here's your garden to-do list this week.
All right. Some things to get out there and do. The fescue grass is going crazy right now, so make sure you're mowing that. It's so happy. We've gotten a lot of rain in March. It's growing at a good clip. So you're out there taking care of your lawns. Maybe you're mowing your warm season grasses for the first time as they're coming out of dormancy. But sod supplier NG Turf on the show here with me in less than 10 minutes recommends fill in those low spots in your warm season lawns. Work on that the next few weeks. First, determine the cause. You know, what is causing a low spot? Is it big? Is it retaining water? Maybe it was an old tree that was there and the roots are finally starting to deteriorate underneath. But make sure once you figure out the cause, you're able to stay ahead of it. Mow the grass first. Remove any leaf debris if necessary. Then use sand and organic material like compost to fill that in. And then you're going to be ready to patch it over with some sod or some seed or whatever in the next coming months. Number two, wait and plant gladiolas and canna lilies and caladiums until maybe mid-month. They need a little bit warmer soil, but you do see canna lilies coming up now if you've already got some in the landscape. And don't plant vegetables just yet. You can, just be ready to cover them in case you hear Christina Edwards or Brad Nitz go, oh no, it's going to get below freezing, which there's still a chance. You never know. So you're saying there's a chance. And number three, repot houseplants you plan to move outdoors. The roots are going to need more room as they grow rapidly in the sun. So keep that in mind. Whatever pot they've been in the house, go up an inch or two. That's the only biggest size you need to go. You don't need to go huge. Make sure as you're making the transition from indoors to outdoors that you don't put them in bright, direct sun. That's going to scald the leaves. But just kind of slowly ease them out into the sun and they're going to be pretty good. 404-872-0750 is the number. Up next is Dennis from Woodstock. Hey, we got a couple minutes. Dennis, what's going on?
Hi, good morning.
Oh, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I got a question. I have become obsessed with artichokes, and I want to grow them. And I've heard different stories, though. I called my nursery yesterday, and they said, oh, that's a fall plant. I'm like, that's odd, because my friend in California, of course, the weather there is different, grows them year round. I've heard that they can be a perennial in the South. Then I've heard they could only be an annual in the South. Do you know much about growing artichokes, starting them from seeds, buying a plant?
I don't know a whole lot about them. I'm with you. I like to eat them too. Like a good jar of marinated artichoke hearts is great with me in a pasta salad and a lot of things. From Walter's website, Walter Reeves has been asked this question a lot because there is that debate, right? So you can buy seed online and you're starting them indoors back in February, believe it or not, just like you are with your warm season vegetables like your squash and okra, pepper plants, tomatoes. If you did all that in February, artichokes would be right along those lines if you do seed. But planting outside after tax day, like we're talking about, everything else is going to be okay. Then protect them from, you know, colder weather or whatever. And he's saying harvest unopened buds when the lowest bud bracts, or the lowest leaves, separate from the main bud. So when you start to see that movement kind of happen, that's how you know you're going to harvest them. The first hard freeze is going to kill off the plants in the fall. So they'll have a number of months, you know, from April through September, October, to be out there in the garden and doing okay. That's at least one variety. There may be a couple that, you know, maybe aren't as well suited, so you'll need to do a little bit of research. Go on the University of Georgia Extension site, extension.uga.edu, and just under publications, type artichoke, and see what varieties they recommend. There's probably going to be a list of five or six at least that you would want to start with that are going to be best suited for us.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, and go to town with artichokes. They're so good. I love them. Questions about your lawns, about sod, about grass, how you buy the best sod, how to maintain it, what to do. I've got Jut Howard here, VP of Business Operations and a certified turf professional from NG Turf. When we come back, 404-872-0750.
Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
7:35, halfway through the show. I do this for you every Saturday morning right here on 95.5 WSB. I'm going to give you a heads up. I am off the last Saturday of April, though, but I've got a great show for you for sure. Something new every Saturday. 404-872-0750 is the number, but we've had this on the books for quite a while. I've got with me in studio Jut Howard, VP of Business Operations of NG Turf, with six farms throughout Georgia, certified turf professional himself. Jut, good morning.
Good morning, Ashley. Thanks for letting us be here.
I've really been looking forward to this. Yeah, when we first met, and I've seen the name NG Turf at industry conferences and things that I've gone to for years, and to actually get to know you guys and partner with you guys is an honor for me. So thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure here. Thank you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So six farms, if I'm counting right. Where are all of the farms throughout Georgia? It's cool. Y'all hit up like a good part of coverage of every part of the state.
That's right. We started out in 1986. Aaron McWhorter, our founder and CEO, grew up in the dairy business in Heard County. And in the mid-80s, began a turf farm in Whitesburg, Georgia, between Carrollton and Noonan. And over the years, we've expanded into Clarksville and Habersham County, as well as Calhoun and Gordon and Murray counties. We have two farms in Middle Georgia, one in Perry and one in Fort Valley.
Wow.
We've got a new farm undergoing in Douglas County on the river, if anybody's familiar with Old Patterson Dairy on 166. And we're currently putting in a farm in Clayton County, as well as over in Oxford, Alabama. So it'll be our first operation out of state. So we're excited. We're growing and looking forward to the upcoming spring.
And all those places you mentioned, the climate can be wildly different, right? I mean, Clayton County's so close to the metro. Fort Valley's much further south. So does that determine what sod is grown at each of those farms?
Well, in some cases, that's exactly the case. In Habersham County in Clarksville, we purchased that farm with the intent of being able to grow fescue, a cool season grass, and carry that through the summertime. But majority of our farms, as compared to other farms in the state, a lot of the other sod production, we are what I would consider local. We're growing in more local soil types and closer to the market and can harvest that grass a little fresher. And I think when you're dealing with sod and having freshness as the primary factor, I think we've got a key advantage there.
Yeah, because by the time you guys dig it up and that big sod tractor comes up and peels it up and rolls and things, and you're getting it on the trucks and stuff, I mean, what, do you have 2 or 3 days max to try to get it in someone's soil?
Depending on the time of year, as we move into spring and grass right now is coming out of dormancy. There's a little bit longer shelf life, but we still recommend as grass begins to green up to install that immediately upon delivery. So we're generally harvesting fresh the afternoon before delivery. We're putting that on our own trucks and delivering those early. We deliver Saturday mornings. We deliver Monday mornings all through the week. And we encourage everyone to get that sod down that day just as soon as you can and get to irrigating it. So quality, freshness, and getting it installed timely is the key to success in putting down sod.
You know, it's one thing, like I'm pretty ambitious, so I'll go to the nursery, right, and buy flats of flowers and a couple of pots and stuff. Best of intentions, right? By the time I unload the car, get home, feed the dog, listen to my messages, do whatever I need to do. I'm like, I ran out of daylight. I'm going to have to plant this stuff tomorrow or maybe the next day. Then work gets too busy. So it's one thing to do that with your plants, or like you have wood chips dumped in the driveway or gravel and you're like, I'll spread it this weekend. But you're right. If that sod is delivered to your home, you probably need to get it on the ground quick.
It is. It's a perishable product. And, you know, we do a little things different and comparative to other providers in the industry. We have a year-round guarantee on our product, but that's one of the key things that we ask our customers to do is, you know, get the ground prep, get the sod down timely, and get it irrigated. And if you have any problems, we're here long after the sale with a team of certified professionals to help assist on selecting the right grass. But then if you have any issues moving forward, we're here to help with that as well.
Well, and it's nice to know, you know, y'all have a phone number on the website on ngturf.com. It's not just for sales. People can call that number. It's almost like a helpline or a hotline, like you said. People are giving advice to customers. Okay, wait, I want to make sure, you know, they just left my house and I forget what they said to do. Can you help me? And y'all are there for that.
Absolutely. We have a team of salespeople that we encourage to go through a program where they become certified turf professionals. It takes about a year and a half to complete that with 2 proctored exams. So it's about a 4-inch thick notebook that they spend a while studying. But we believe that that's the key of what sets us apart and what makes us different is that we want to help the customer be successful, and you need to be knowledgeable. And sometimes not every sod is the right solution. Sometimes sod may not be the solution. So I think we'll talk about shade here a little bit today. And when is that the question? When is turf grass maybe not the right solution? But in most cases, we have something that will solve the problem.
I love it. And, you know, people are hearing the commercials run on WSB right now talking about Zeon Zoysia, Rebel Fescue, Tiff Tuff Bermuda. So something for everybody. Grown at the locally sourced NG Turf Farms here in Georgia. 404-872-0750. If you have any questions for Jut this morning about your sod, about installing it, we're going to cover a lot of those things too. And Jut, since you just mentioned it, we did have Jim on hold and Jim had to drop. But every week, if I had a dollar or $10 for every week, we get questions about growing grass in shade, right? We love our trees. Atlanta is a city in the trees. So we've got trees. That's just part of the deal. But everybody wants that nice, lush, green grass underneath trees. So we're contending with the shade. But you guys do have solutions for that. Now, we're not talking full shade here, but you can work around some shade sometimes.
That's right. So there's definitely certain varieties. You know, when you're talking warm season turf varieties, so you have zoysias, you have Bermudas, centipedes. Traditionally, your Bermuda grasses would not be considered a shade-tolerant variety, where there are others that, like Tiff Tuff, that in recent studies have shown to be more shade-tolerant than other Bermudas. I really wouldn't recommend a Bermuda in a heavy shade environment. And what do you consider shade? What is heavy shade? And how much is 6 hours of sunlight today, and what does that look like a month from now?
Oh, yeah.
So those are always difficult things to explain to a customer, but what we suggest is that, you know, you need at least 6 to 8 hours of full direct sunlight to put a Bermuda grass in. When you get below that, Zoysia would be my next recommendation for a warm season grass. Zeon, in 10 or 15, 20 years of studies all across the Southeast, has well performed as the most shade tolerant Zoysia variety. Very popular grass, much for that success in shade. And, you know, trimming back trees, you know, sometimes taking bed lines out to the edge of the tree line, drip line.
Yeah.
Those are things that can help you be successful. So, you know, when you get into extremely shaded environments, that's when I would maybe suggest fescue or another cool season grass. There's some new bluegrasses that are hybrids that are have some Texas bluegrass mixed in with them, so they're a little better drought tolerance, a little better heat tolerance than fescue. They don't have to be overseeded. And so Sunbelt Blue and Southern Blue are two bluegrass varieties that we have that will, again, very shade tolerant and handle the heat a little better.
And that'll have kind of the look of fescue, these bluegrasses, because I've not seen bluegrass up close, but I picture something a little more tall and thin and blady, but not necessarily. It's still going to be like lawn type.
Yes, very, very similar to fescue. They are a cross between a Kentucky bluegrass and a Texas bluegrass. So they're bred for a turf grass cultivar and can be maintained. You know, we recommend somewhere in a 2.5 to 3.5 inch like you would fescue. But a beautiful color to both of them. But they were bred out of Texas A&M to be a more heat and drought tolerant variety of a cool season grass. So they stay green year round. They're not the solution everywhere. We're
right
in a transition zone here in Atlanta. But for those that want year-round green, they've got an irrigation system, they've got heavy shade, it is a great solution for those issues.
You know, when we have our friend Clint Waltz, you know, UGA turf grass specialist on the show, and thankfully I've got such a good relationship with Clint, and I know y'all do too. I see him multiple times a year, but he's on the show 2 or 3 times a year. It's just really interesting to listen to him talk about how closely UGA, NC State, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, all of these universities working together, doing the research that they do to come up with these new varieties that we wouldn't have thought possible 20 years ago. I mean, if you've got a problem, they put their heads together and say, okay, here's something we're coming out with that, like you said, is more drought resistant, is more shade tolerant. I mean, it's just incredible. It's almost like, I need this exact type of grass. Well, give us 10 years and we'll develop it. It's pretty neat.
Absolutely. I mean, everything the land grant system has done for agriculture and the general farmer or the general homeowner and through the years has been fantastic. And that's no different in the turf grass realm, that all these universities work together through collaboration, through research. One breeding program may have a new variety that they want to look at, and they'll send it to all their fellow breeders across the Southeast and put those in trials. And it's key to point out that a new grass cultivar generally takes 15 years to develop from when that breeder first comes up with that cross until we release it to to the end user. It's a long process to vet these grasses. So the universities are a key part of that. And Clint's a great friend, and Brian Schwartz with UGA's breeding program. We work closely with those guys.
Yeah, when they get to do these trials, you know, like on the Griffin campus, and just neat how meticulous they keep notes of these trials, which, like you said, could take years. Have you gotten to go to the turf grass field day down there at the Griffin campus? I have yet to go, but that sounds like so much fun.
Well, it's no doubt, if you ask Clint, it will be the hottest day of the year.
Yeah, always in August. Right?
It is a great event, and you know, they sort of overview in one day all of the research that all of his team have done through the year, and some new grasses that are coming on, some new products, herbicides that may do a better job. So Clint and his staff do a great job, and all the UGA turf team.
So while all of us homeowners are sitting back in the summertime enjoying our time by the lake or the pool or camping or just working out in the yard, I mean, these guys, including NG Turf, no different, working 365 days a year to make sure the grass is grown well and responsibly and researched here in Georgia, and coming up with new ideas all the time. 404-872-0750. Going to take a break. We welcome your calls for Jut Howard, VP of Business Operations with NG Turf, this morning here until 9 o'clock. You're listening to Green and Grow on 95.5 WSB.
The WSB news and traffic teams will keep you updated all weekend here on 95.5 WSB. Listen first thing Monday at 5 a.m. for those important news, weather, and traffic updates.
Now back to Ashley Fresca and Green and Growing.
You know, when we come back, I give you an update on the weekend weather. If you're just waking up, good morning. It's going to be a beautiful day. This brought to you by Finley Roofing. Partly cloudy, highs in the mid-60s. It's going to be pretty mild and pretty nice today, especially out in the sunshine. And tomorrow, mostly sunny, warming up to the low 70s, and lows only around 50 is pleasant. And then rain may be in the forecast as early as Tuesday. We will see. The complete forecast comes up in less than 10 minutes.
Green and Growing. Ashley Frasca's top three things to do this weekend.
All right, number one, repot house plants. If you're going to start moving those outdoors, that's awesome. The roots are going to need more room, though, so go up maybe an inch or two in diameter with a larger pot. Fresh soil, too. Number two, wait to plant things like gladiolas, canna lilies, and caladiums until maybe mid-April. They need a little bit warmer soil, and hold off on planting the vegetables. And number three, this one's from you, Judd. Sod supplier NG Turf recommends you fill in those low spots in your warm season lawns. Work on that in the next few weeks. Why is that important? Why do they want to get ahead of filling in the low spots now? We're prepping for what?
Well, I would just say, if you've got an area that you would like to sod this spring, then go ahead and start preparing that ground. So if you've got to do some backfilling and level that up, it's got some time to settle and be prepared for putting that sod down.
It's going to be so hard to lay sod in this divoted, dipping yard. You know, people are going to be happy they did this work now so that the laying process in the summertime goes much smoother for them.
Right. And the more level the lawn, the more consistent cut you're going to get with the mower, and less scalping, less injury to the plant. So it's a great thing to do.
I'm glad you mentioned scalping. Your preference, scalping Bermuda, yes or no? Do you need to do it?
I don't like the word scalping.
Seems a little harsh, doesn't it?
it can be, and that's the point, is that if you mow too low, you can get down and damage the crown of the plant. Removing some old leaf tissue from when the grass has gone dormant is not a bad thing, to get that and rake it up and get it out, because the turf definitely needs to get some sunlight penetrating down to create that new growth this spring. So, you know, if you've taken your grass through dormancy and it's, you know, 2.5, 3, 4 inches tall, I would recommend taking that down to 1.5 inches somewhere in that area to allow that sunlight to get through. But going too low can damage the plant if you're not careful.
And I'm glad we talk about that, because I think maybe the word scalping means different things to different people. But when we talk about it and tell you not to do it, it's that extreme, right, of taking it way back to where you're going to injure the crown.
Correct.
But some people are like, oh, I scalp my lawn. Well, by that, they just mean mowing it real short. You know.
And I think that's a fantastic thing to do right now. My general rule of thumb is take the grass out of dormancy with where you go into it when it goes into dormancy. So keep that in mind in the fall, that, okay, I need to start taking this down a little bit so it's 1.5, 2 inches, and you don't have all that material that's sort of laying over when the grass tries to transition in the springs.
And it's nice. You roll that mower into the shed or the garage or whatever in the fall, and then when you bring it back out, make sure it's got some fresh gasoline and stuff. Don't change the mower height.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, that's easy, folks. You don't have to do anything there. 404-872-0750. Up first for a question for Jut is Bill from Marietta. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I'm in public. If you hear background noise, I'll try to step away from everybody.
Hey, are you buying breakfast for me?
Yeah.
You okay.
We're getting it going. My question, I have a strip of a grass patch area, probably 20 by 50. I just happened to get next to some firefighters now. They got the radio going. Okay, 20 by 50 strips of grass by the lake in the back of my house. I've tried fescue. I've tried planting some centipede seed, but it's so wet down there when it rains and the soil stays moist, of course, attracts geese. And the shade is probably a factor. I get about 4 hours of sunlight. What grass would you recommend close to water edges?
Well, I would say one of the key things in any turf grass cultivar is they generally do not like a lot of standing water. So doing whatever you can do to create a slope there so you don't have any standing water. With that, some of your Bermuda grasses may handle some wetter conditions than, say, zoysias or fescue with, where they're a little more prone to disease, mm-hmm. and that could be an issue. Again, if you've got shades, a major issue there. What time of year were you planting your fescue?
I hit it in the fall. I normally get it right around September.
Yeah, that's ideal.
Yeah, I was going to suggest trying that in the fall. So if you're doing that and not successful there, yeah, just trying to make sure you can get that to dry up as well as you can. But I think most cultivars would be acceptable there if you can get it as dry as possible.
And maybe considering, too, I know that's a bigger strip coming back from the lake, as Bill mentioned there, Jut, but ornamental grasses or something that can take wet feet that may be good as plantings, like in layers a little bit going back from the lake's edge. And then maybe we're getting further away from the water and then kind of start to, you know, you're kind of narrowing down the spot that he's wanting turf, but that might be a consideration too.
I wouldn't be a good salesman to say use less sod, but but that is what we try to do, is, you know, help you be successful. So sometimes, you know, creating some bed lines, creating some other landscape and using sod as a transition from those areas that don't do as well will improve the landscape overall. So.
Yeah, and as Jud mentioned, I mean, seeding the fescue or laying down fescue sod in the fall is going to be ideal. That's going to give it the best chance to take. Thank you for the call, Bill. We'll see you in a little while for breakfast. 404-872-0750. Questions about NG Turf's farms here throughout Georgia. Robert in Marietta has a question about our favorite weed. Can you guess what it is?
Crabgrass.
Poa annua.
Okay.
Oh, annual.
We're not
bluegrass.
Quite the crabgrass yet.
No, not yet. But they're both just as annoying, right? 404-872-0750. We'll be right back. It's Ashley Frasca hosting Green and Growing.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.